Welcome to The Unraveler, a weekly commentary devoted to explaining the Torah, Haftarah, and other aspects of Jewish history, ideas, and thought. This podcast is made by the FJMC, the Federation of Jewish Men's Clubs. The material of these Unraveler podcasts provide a historical and somewhat different approach to help you, the listener, better understand Jewish life and thought. This week's Haftarah commentary is read by Michael Freilich of the Seaboard region of the FJMC, whose Judaic knowledge has been shared with men throughout North America. We hope you enjoy it and find it intellectually challenging. The opinions expressed in The Unraveler are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the opinions or policy of the FJMC.
Shalom all you all. This portion this week is Pinchas. Pinchas is a name. It's the first distinctive word in the Parsha. It is the 41st weekly Torah reading in the traditional Jewish cycle. It tells the story of Pinchas, who kills a couple, who ends a plague, and of five daughters who succeed in plea for land rights. It constitutes Numbers chapters 25, verses 10 through 30, through chapter 29. Verses 1 through 6. Parshat Pinchas is taken from 1 Kings, chapters 18, verses 46 through chapter 19, verse 21. Perhaps a little bit of history would be helpful. First, Elijah, who is the principal character of the story, is a miracle worker and a prophet who lived in the northern kingdom of Israel during the reign of King Ahab. By the 9th century BCE, according to the Bible history, the land of Israel had been united under Solomon, but was then divided into the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. Omri, who has been the king of Israel, continued the policies dating from the reign of Jeroboam, contrary to Jewish law, that they were intended to reorient religious focus from Jerusalem, encouraging the building of local temples, altars for sacrifices, appointing priests from outside the family of the Levites, and allowing or encouraging temples dedicated to Baal, an important deity in ancient Canaanite religion. Omri achieved domestic security by the marriage of his son Ahab and the princess Jezebel, who was a priestess of Baal and the daughter of the king of Sidon and Phoenicia. These solutions brought temporary security and economic prosperity to Israel, but it did not bring peace with the Israelite prophets who advocate Deuteronomic interpretation of religious law. Under Ahav's kingship, tensions exacerbated. Ahav built a temple for Baal, and his wife Jezebel brought a large entourage of priests and prophets of Baal and Asherah into the country. In this context, Elijah is introduced in Kings as a Tishbite. He warns Ahav there will be years of catastrophic drought, so severe that not even dew will form, because Ahav and his queen Jezebel, at the end of the line of kings of Israel, who were said to have done evil in the sight of the Lord. In 1 Kings chapter 18, Elijah defends the worship of the Hebrew God over that of the Canaanite deity, Baal. Haftarah for the Parshat Pinchas features the last and perhaps most famous biblical story about Elijah the prophet. Living during the reign of the evil Israelite King Ahab and his even worse queen Jezebel, Elijah gained a reputation for working miracles and crusading against idolatry. The Haftarah begins just after Elijah has slaughtered 450 worshippers of Baal. Jezebel gets word of the massacre which Elijah perpetrated, and Jezebel is absolutely, positively furious. Jezebel promises that on the very next day, Elijah's fate will be the same as those he killed. Frightened, Elijah runs for his life. He stops under a bush in the wilderness, feeling defeated. "Enough, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's," he mutters. Elijah falls asleep, but is awakened by an angel, urging him to eat cake and drink water, which had just miraculously shown up at his side. Elijah eats, but again he falls asleep. The angel is persistent and wakes Elijah a second time, telling him to eat and drink. There is a long journey in front of him. With the strength gained from this last meal of cake, Elijah walks for 40 days in the desert, to the mountain of God at Horeb, He finds a cave there and spends the night. While asleep in the cave, God appears to Elijah and asks him a powerful question. Why are you here? Elijah responds with a monologue defending his zealotry. I am moved by zeal for the Lord, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to the sword. I am left, and they are out to take my life. Instead of replying to Elijah's claim, God takes Elijah out of the cave and shows him some miracles. First, God sends a mighty wind, splitting mountains and rocks. But the text tells us God was not in the wind. Then God creates a forceful earthquake. Again, the text specifies God was not in the earthquake. Then God sets a powerful fire. But once again, we learn the fire did not contain God's presence. Finally, God brings about a still, small voice. Why are you here, Elijah? God poses this question a second time. But Elijah is unchanged even after experiencing the wind, the earthquake, the fire, and the small voice. He responds to God's question with precisely the same self-important words he used before. I am moved by zeal for the Lord, for the Israelites have forsaken. I am alone. In Elijah's unchanged response, we see the tragedy of his life. That still small voice had been God's attempt to teach Elijah zealotry and God and grand miracles are not always the best way to serve God's purpose. But Elijah is a man who only knows to act with fire and brimstone. He could not learn the lesson. In the final verses of the Haftarah, God has Elijah appoint a new king in Aram, a new king in Israel, and a new prophet in Israel, Elisha. By appointing Elisha, Elijah effectively surrenders his position as a prophet. Towards the end of the Haftarah, when Elisha asks to kiss his parents goodbye before he follows Elijah, it is hopeful that perhaps Elisha will embody a more human, balanced kind of leadership for Israel. This connects with the Parshat and the Torah. They are both famous as the two most famously zealots for God. Just as the text describes Phinehas as a zealot for bringing a bloody end to the public copulation of the Israelite man and the Midianite woman, the Torah seems to support Phinehas' zealotry. Perhaps the choice of Elijah's story as a Haftorah is meant to remind us that zealotry is not always the best approach. Where Phinehas killed Zimri and Cozbi to stem the Israelites' following of Baal Peor. Just as in the heresy of Peor, while immediately before the Haftorah, Elijah killed the prophets of Baal to stop the Israelites from following Baal. There is identification in Jewish tradition between Phinehas and Elijah. There are some to even suggest that since there was no death shown of Phinehas in the Torah, that his was still alive and that he perhaps was Elijah. The interesting questions for me is why this was chosen as the Haftorah for this section of the Torah. I can speculate, but I don't know. Remember that most of the Haftorah were chosen to be taught during the periods just after and during the Maccabees, when Antiochus proscribed the reading of the Torah, but did not prescribe the reading of the other parts of the Bible. Again, I must remind you, your darshan today is not a rabbi, not a scholar, but, as we say in Hebrew, Rak Yehudi Pashut Meharei Baltimore, just but a simple Jew from the hills of Baltimore. As my daughter would say, Shalom all you all.
We hope that you've enjoyed this podcast. The FJMC mission is to involve Jewish men in Jewish life. You can find more information about the organization at the FJMC's website at www.fjmc.org. Music for this podcast is Climb by Shane Ivers and is available at www.silvermansound.com.